Right, we're here. I won't give
if
you
she's
the address.
Annoying you, you can push her.
No,
in
we're here
the
in the company of Brenda Fricker and Juno, her dog. Tell us a bit about Juno.
Well, Juno is a stray. The story goes that somebody threw her out of a car in the M4. I wasn't there, but some friends of mine, Rita and Mary, who live in Fircroft in Kildare, saved her. And my other border collie had died at the time. And I've never had any other dog but a border collie. I now have a bearded collie. And she does have a beard.
Now, I shouldn't really say this because I might get you in trouble, but she seems to be well-groomed and dog groomers are closed.
She's been scalped.
So, did you do that yourself?
She looked like a Dulux dog yesterday. No, I made a connection, as I said, to in Underground the Liberties and a kind man.
Right.
Read her offer. She was bad in the heat. She looked uncomfortable.
You've made your home here for the last 30 years. What is it about it? Because you're not from the Liberties, are you?
No, I'm not at all. I'm a blow-in. No, I'll tell you why I bought it. Because it was very run down and it was the only place I could afford to buy it. And I got, I think it was £6,000 for doing, the fee was for my left foot. Might have been eight. And that was for sale for four or five or something. So I kind of bought it and just left it there. And I thought, well, I'll have a pad in Dublin and I'll do it up. So it was very casual. I didn't go looking for it, so to speak, you know.
So two things there. Firstly,
the dog.
No, the money you paid for the house. And secondly, the fee you got for my left foot.
Is that very little?
Yeah, well, I would think so.
Awesome. 30 years ago.
I know, still.
But nobody had any money. That film was cancelled I don't know how many times. And Noel Pearson, bless his heart, I think he mortgaged his house at least twice.
Yeah.
And we just stopped and we were told it's not happening. And Daniel and I would go back to London. And Daniel was the one. He'd be on the plane and he'd say, I'll see you on Monday. He was the one who kept going, you know.
And there was no money, but it became obviously this Oscar-winning movie. Did you get any, you know, benefit from that afterwards? Was there any
no
bonuses
points.
Afterwards?
No,
no points.
No points were given to us.
How do you feel? How does that make you feel?
That makes you rankle because they should give actors a point. They don't. I have no points in any film apart from Home Alone 2, and I actually get checks for 46 cents. From some of them, but people think I'm making a fortune. But, you know, Macaulay Culkin had like 10 points, so he's worth millions. Christopher Columbus, the director, God knows how many points he had.
So that means you get a percentage of...
You get a percentage of...
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. So I don't have points in, except Home Alone 2.
Yeah, well, that's nice, because that's shown over and over again, and we watch it in our house on Apple TV and all sorts of things. So.
The money would fit into a piggy bank,
right,
believe me.
So 46 cent is the smallest.
I get them for 29 cents.
Right.
I think I've had one for $1,000. I nearly had a heart attack and dropped the envelope. But I mean, there's no millions coming in, I can tell you for sure.
And Daniel Day-Lewis, he was, and it's talked about all the time, a method actor. And did that affect you in any way? That
I know, I've kind of gone on record as saying that I don't like method acting. Maybe I said that because I don't do it myself. I honestly, Ray, I don't mind whatever journey an actor takes to get it done properly doesn't bother me if it doesn't interfere with me.
Uh-huh.
Now, method acting can interfere with you. And Ray McAnally and myself really didn't know what method acting is until we were bombarded with the beautiful Daniel Day-Lewis. It's a bit disconcerting if you don't know about it. Because if somebody stays in character all day and you're saying, how are you, Daniel? Do you want a cup of tea? And you go, it is different from my generation.
Yeah. And of course, you were his mother in the movie.
I was.
Yeah. And he had to be fed in the movie.
Oh, you know the story, do you?
Well,
oh, you know the story.
I'm edging
towards
it. You want
me to tell it, do you? I can feel you coming for it. Yeah. Okay. Yes. And when the canteen lunchtime break came.
Right.
Off we went down to have our lunch and he was staying in character and he wanted me to feed him. And I thought, this is wonderful, you know, the way he's staying in character. And I was feeding him beans or whatever he was having. And then I went off, they're all up in the bar. I don't know if you remember the bar in Ardmore, it was great.
Mm.
Playing pool and having
it was a sort of mezzanine thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was a great bar. Yeah. And in those days, you would have a few pints at lunchtime. I don't think you get away with that now. And the second day, I was giving him the breakfast again, talking to him as the mother. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I don't want to be doing this. So the third day came and I went in and I said to him, I said, when you were doing My Beautiful Laundrette, I said, did you have a love affair with any of the men? Did you do your homework on that? And he kind of paused and gave me a look. And I went off then and ignored him and came back the next morning. And I said, he had done a film, and I can't remember the name of it, in which he was a killer. He'd murdered somebody.
Right.
And I said, do you remember that film there, Daniel, where you were doing? I said, did you kill somebody now to get the research for that? And he said, oh.
But he said it in character.
So he said it in character. And Christie said that a lot, you know.
He did.
So I was grand from then on.
Yeah. It's a big year for you this year, in that it is 30 years since you won the Oscar.
Not a big year.
Well, yeah, and you're hitting that. Is that a big... Is your age a big age? No.
That's a lifetime ago.
Yeah, but 75 is 75.
75 is interesting. 70 is a big one, I think, when you turn 70. Great friend of mine, Olympia Dukakis, who's 86 now, and I have kept in touch with her all the time. But when she turned 70, I wanted to know what old age was kind of like. And I said, what does old age feel like? And she said, you know you're old. That's definitely old. You look around and you can see the road down in front of you and you're going straight towards it. Grand. And she was, that was right. And I felt that. When she turned 80, I said, now tell me, what does it feel like to be 80? She said, decrepit. I could see in her face she meant it. So I'm waiting to see. Well, now, being 75 at the moment,
yeah,
not very good the way we're being treated, you know.
Because you had to cocoon there for a long time. You weren't allowed
that
out of your house.
That lovely word has been ruined. Mm. It was such a beautiful word, and it's a nasty word now.
It was all warm and cuddly.
Yeah, and
comforting.
Protective,
yes.
And safe, yeah. And all that. And there you were, petrified in your own house, you know. I didn't know what to do. And it's really just become another one of those occasions where the lid is lifted on society, and we see yet again how the elderly are treated.
Do you think that's going to change now?
No.
After this? No.
I don't think. When is the last culture where it changed? You become invisible. People kind of say hello and they walk past you and talk to the person behind you. It is most extraordinary, and you'll remember me saying this when you turned 70. And it's just, I think it's deplorable, and it's every country in the world. None of them got it right.
And when you obviously stay in touch with the news, you know, reading the stories.
CNN, I watch.
But you know what's happened what has happened.
Keep
in nursing homes.
Keep an eye on Mr. Trump.
Oh, God, there you go.
Let's get away from that. Sorry, I mentioned him.
You met him. Well, not met him.
No, I didn't meet him. I don't know anything about him.
But both of you were in the same movie. He was in Home Alone 2 as well, wasn't he?
No, he owned the Plaza Hotel.
Was he not? I think he was in it for a moment.
Well, that's the first news I've heard of. When was he in it?
Didn't Macaulay Culkin pass him in the foyer of the hotel?
Oh, he might have done that.
Did a double take, yeah.
Yeah, he might have done that.
Now, maybe you were in it.
I was stuck in the lift with him once, which was extremely unpleasant, but he wasn't as bad then as he is now. Like,
yeah. And were you in your pigeon lady gear?
If you want to get into a crowded lift, get in with bird shit all over you. That stinks. And the place empties. So you get the bar. I know, you didn't go to the bar. We were filming literally across the road.
Yeah.
So it would have been silly to go to a trailer and get changed.
I'd love to hear his version of that story.
I'd love to hear his version of that story.
Probably
too.
Not true.
I should dress up like that and go in again and say, how are you?
How are you dealing with it? How are you navigating it? You're not cocooning anymore. You can go for a walk with Juno. Is it affecting you in a big way?
I'm not navigating it. I mean, post-vaccine society, where is it going to go? What is the future for our young ones? I mean, football stadiums, theatres, rock concerts, the society, the things that make up society, more for young people than, well, for everybody. Where is it going? I mean, I'm frightened for people. I'm glad I'm 75 and not 25.
Go on.
Just because I can't navigate it. That's the awful thing. I don't know. Normally you'd have an opinion, or it might go this way. I don't know. I'm frightened.
But you'd like to think that, you know, when they come up with a vaccine and they're saying, you know, next year sometime, that that'll be back to normal then after that. No.
I don't think it'll ever go back to normal. I think it's changed people. You know, we went indoors because we were frightened. And we're still a bit frightened and we're nervous we're going out again. Except for the hooligans that go off to Dollymount Strand when they're not supposed to. But psychologically, I think people being at home all the time and with their families and nearly killing them and nearly loving them, it's completely, there's a huge van coming up here.
Well, that's the beauty of it. We'll wave to him. How's it going? How are you?
Hello, Ray. What's your name?
Aidan.
How are you, Aidan?
How are you, Aidan?
Brenda.
How are you doing?
Good.
Do you want to say hello to RT Radio 1 there? Go on, just say hello.
Can you hear me from here?
Yeah.
Hello.
That's Aidan.
That's Aidan.
See you, Aidan.
That's Aidan.
Have a good
Bye.
Day.
God bless. Have a good day.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. It's weird. Everybody knows my name.
Is that weird for you?
People come up and say, are you Brendan Flicker? I say, no. You're not Brendan Flicker. I say, no.
Is that weird? Because I'd say you're
it's
not very comfortable.
It's weird when you get it wrong.
Oh, yeah, I know it did, because you're a woman and all that, not a Brendan. But it strikes me that, and people might know, that you happened into acting sort of by accident. You were,
yeah,
in the Irish Times.
Yeah.
And you got a call from a man in RTE because they were starting a new TV soap. Well,
that's
I don't think
right.
they were called soaps
Charles
at the time.
Perreault, yeah.
Was it called a drama?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
It wasn't a soap.
No.
That word came from America, I remember. We were all laughing at a soap. Like, you wash yourself with soap. How can you have a television thing called a soap?
Was it? I think it wasn't it because they were sponsored by soap brands?
Oh, was that it?
I think
so. Never knew.
I think there you go.
Could be right.
Yeah, yeah, we just
you could
say it with
right.
confidence, Brendan.
Sounds logical. Yeah.
So you, what age were you? Were you still in your teens?
Oh, jeez, I can't remember what age I was when I did anything. I was. Oh no, no, I was well out of my teens. I would have been in my early 20s.
Right.
Yeah, and I had great crack doing that. And then somebody else offered me a job. But, I mean, the word career never came into my vocabulary at all. Or the things that kids say now, oh, I want to be famous or I want to be a celebrity. Or they have such passion about it. I didn't really care much if I got a job. That was it, a job. You had a job.
Yeah.
You went into Neary's because there was no other way of finding out was there a job. And you see anybody in town, any work. You know. It was very easy going. And I stayed in it because I liked it. Got paid for it.
And you're good at it?
Well, I've got paid for it, I suppose I was.
Yeah. When did you realise you were good at it?
Next job, maybe.
Was it? Was that it? Just yeah. when they asked you back?
I know this sounds kind of falsely, being sort of shy. I'm not sure I'm good at all. I mean, I know that sounds kind of silly, but if other people think you're good... And you don't think... I mean, in certain films, yes, and in certain scenes in certain films, you feel, yes, I did that well. But I couldn't say as an overall statement that I'm good.
Mm.
That would be a lie.
But you're very hard on yourself.
No, I think I'm honest with myself.
Right.
A lot of actors go around blowing their trumpet, but you get nothing right.
Yeah,
you know?
but it's an opinion, though, isn't it?
I'm capable of being good.
Right, you're
we'll
capable of being good.
That.
Yeah, yeah, I'd settle for that. I'd settle for that. Because... Your mother's mentioned all the time, and you mentioned her, and she wasn't very nice to you. And I think that your lack of confidence, and I can sense it already, is her fault.
You reckon?
Well, you know, Madonna, and I wouldn't quote her often, but she says the greatest thing you can give to your children is self-confidence.
Yes. I don't think she... Well, she was the one who dressed me up in silly dresses and took me to the Father Matthew Fesh and sort of gave me confidence to go up and do Irish dancing. So maybe it was a different kind of a thing.
Mm.
And I'm working very hard and I'm winning on reconciling with my mother. You know,
see,
I went out to Sandyman. What do you call the place out in... this is disgraceful. I can't remember the name of where she's buried. Dean's Grange.
Right.
I went out there the other day and I have little chats with her and it's working. It was a difficult relationship, but it's...
What do you say to her?
I'm not telling you what I say to her.
No, just an idea of it. But because it was a fractious, fraught relationship with your mother.
It was, but she died from a brain tumour, and talking to the doctor at the time, my sister Grania, who was always the leader and the rebel, asked the doctor about the tumour, and he said she could have had it from birth.
Mm.
So I'm thinking now that she was such a nice, kind woman... That there was just this streak in her that would attack me and my sister. But outside that percentage of her, she was lovely. Lovely. I mean, her funeral, the whole of Dundrum was packed. And we were standing on either side of the coffin, the way they used to do in those days and can't do now, God love them. And people were coming up, shaking her hands. And honestly, Ray, I think every single one said, your mother gave me a fiver when I didn't have
it,
and she paid the rent. And Grania and I were looking at each other thinking, gosh, this woman was nice, you know.
I'm interested to know why you feel the need to make a peace with her.
Because it was very difficult and she was violent.
Yeah.
You know? And it's unforgivable to be punching the kid in the face. Like, it's hard to get over that. But there was a reason for it. She wasn't a naturally cruel person. So something must have taken her over to do it. And I'm not making an excuse for her now.
Yeah. But
listen,
you know that...
Why do you say just, yeah?
You know that Philip Larkin poem where our parents, they fuck us up and...
Exactly, yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I don't know, I'm just really curious as to why you feel you have to make, like...
I don't try to talk about it that much. I
mean,
said now, the way you're looking now, lack of confidence. I feel very confident
today. The thing that intrigues me most is the making peace with a woman who was so cruel to you. That's...
Well, not being a practicing religion person of any kind, I think forgiveness is important in life, definitely. And if it's your parents, even if they have fucked you up, you have to forgive them because it's a bitter, nasty, resentful thing to be carrying around in your heart. So, yes, I'd be more peaceful if I forgave her. You look totally convinced.
So I'm meters away from an Oscar.
Are you?
Am I? I'm just wondering, is it in...
Oh, well, it's not on show.
No, but is it in there somewhere?
I'll give you a tenner if you can find it.
Off you go.
I will. It's I'll like, give you a tenner if you
like
can find
house,
it.
House hunt there.
I let the kids play with this. They love it.
Yeah. You said that you were lucky to win the Oscar.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, mention a name now, Harvey Weinstein... who had professionally, as Daniel said, was a magician and personally was an awful human being. But he picked the picture up and he did all the publicity and got it into the cinema. He did all that. And he was well in with the Academy and they just happened to pick five nominations for this little teensy-weensy film. It was extraordinary. So that me being named was, I thought it was a mistake or something, you know. So, but it was great. We won too.
Yeah, and your friend, what was her name? Mulligan. Was her name Mulligan?
Anne Mulligan.
And she rang you to tell you.
She rang me very early in the morning. And my father was ill at the time, and I was in the back room doing something with him, and the phone rang, and I didn't want to answer it, and it was Anne. And she went, and I said, I can't talk to you. And I'm helping Des. I said, I'll phone you back. And I went in, and Des adores Anne. And I said, that was Anne on the phone. And I said, she doesn't know what she's talking about, something about Oscar Wilde. And I said, I'll give her a ring back in a minute. So I phoned her back, and she was hysterical. You've been nominated for an Oscar. And I said, I didn't even understand what it meant. And that is the truth. Nobody believes me. And I said, what? I vaguely know what that means. And for God's sake, Brenda, she said, it's a huge thing. And I said, I don't explain it to me. And from that moment on, I was always... mesmerised and not quite understanding, and I still really don't, because I don't like prizes in the arts. I don't think it should be competitive.
No, but to be recognised by your peers is something.
Well, if the director says you're good, if an audience tells you you're good, that's enough for me, you know.
Yeah, maybe cherry on the cake. And your dad, was he was still alive when you...
He was, yeah. Yes, and he was too frightened to come with me. They offered to bring him out and pay all the expenses and give him a limousine all to himself and everything else, and he had angina at the time, and he didn't come, and he didn't explain why, and I was very hurt because there were people hanging on the wings of the plane from Ardmore Studios that had nothing to do with the film, you know? And he told me afterwards he was afraid he'd get sick.
Right. And he died soon after then. Was
he
it
died.
The year after, was it? 1991?
I can't remember any dates like that, Ray. I don't know how long he's dead.
Yeah. And your husband died that year, so that was a...
No, he died a couple of years after.
Did he? Right.
Yeah.
Right. Barry.
Barry, yeah.
So he
was very confused about the whole thing.
Was he? Why? He was a director.
Well, he would have been as confused about Oscars as I was. They weren't around.
But he worked in the business, didn't he?
He did. He was a director. He would have known more than me. But genuinely, there weren't... I mean, Josie McAvin had won one for the designed for yeah. Out of Africa. But that wasn't an Irish film, so there was very little publicity about it. But who had an Oscar at that time?
Nobody.
We didn't know about it. I mean, Jim Sheridan was just as innocent. Noel, being a good businessman, I think, knew about it. Daniel, because he comes from film Blue Blood, knew about it.
But and he was aiming to get three.
And he was aiming to get three or four. But no, I was...
But you're still... I know Daniel Day-Lewis is an honorary Irish man, but he wasn't, you know, he's not...
Well, he has an Irish passport.
Yeah. But he wasn't born here.
Well, he has an Irish...
Yes, I know. But you're the only Irish actor born in Ireland to win an Oscar.
Woman.
Yeah.
The only woman.
Yeah.
So far, there's a couple of young ones coming up now that'll take the weight off my soul.
Yeah,
which I think I'd love her not to win because she's got four nominations. And to be nominated is the best position to be in Hollywood because everybody thinks their next movie is you're going to win. So the offers are coming in, you know, really, really fast. When you win, you're out of work for a year, you know? I mean, Vanessa Redgrave was out of work for a year. When we won the Oscars, I was in casualty because I got out of casualty to go. So I was back in work. And remember, nobody said congratulations to me when I walked into the set. Nobody said, what's Hollywood like? Nobody said nothing. I mean, nothing.
Why do you think that was?
Well, I have no idea. But when I got back, there were two phone calls on the answering machine. One was from David Putnam and one was from John Schlesinger, both saying congratulations, but be aware, you won't be popular. Nobody is going to say well done to you. And I listened to them. I thought, that's probably good advice. And they were right. And then after a couple of weeks, Daniel phoned me. And he says, what have I done? And I said, what do you mean? He said, I'm being treated like a criminal. And I said, well, I've been told by two people who've won an Oscar that this is what happens. Now, that is weird to me. Dublin people must say were fantastic.
Right. So you didn't change, but people's attitude towards
you
changed.
Of course, yeah. Some of it was you got paid more, so that was good.
Right. But money never motivated you, did it?
Never. I haven't got any money now. I give it all away.
And you gave it away to people to pay their mortgages and
I
stuff
did,
like that.
Yeah. But now don't be making me out to be
No, you're not Mother Teresa.
Friends who would do the same for me, who were really like on the line, you know, and I had money in the bank. You'd do the same thing.
Mm.
That's all. I don't need much to live. I live under the radar. This lockdown isn't all that different to me because I'm there on my own. But mind you, when you could choose to go out, it's fine. But when you're told to stay in, all you want to do is go out.
Yeah, it's about choice, isn't it?
It's about choice. Exactly.
It is about choice.
Exactly.
When choice is taken away from you, you go,
exactly.
You rage against it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's human nature. So you live on your own. With Juno.
I live on my own with Juno.
That's the best haircut I've ever seen. Sorry, I got a full frontal of it there.
I know. She is like a lion. The head is out of proportion.
So just for our listeners, because this is radio, not television. So Juno's body is completely shaved.
She's normally like the Dulux
number two
dog.
Blade. Yeah.
The
yeah,
Dulux yeah. dog normally. And she's had all her hair. She's like a rat.
Yeah, but the head hasn't been touched.
The head is...
It's
really embarrassing
to
poor dog.
Very well behaved.
She's adored by people. Yeah. She was ballistic when I got her. That 6 months of hour a day training. I'm very proud of myself with that.
So were there poos on the floor and all that?
Oh, no.
No.
No, no. That's a quick one to train. You can
right.
do that easily.
Oh, it's just
enough.
Behavioural issues.
Just like following. Now, watch it. Excuse me.
Just on
people
the look.
People trying to say, get over there. So you teach her phrases that are useful socially. Say, excuse me, and then she'll go away.
Go on.
Excuse me.
Excuse me, Juno. Excuse me.
Ah, don't. Everybody's turning her away.
So, lucky to win the Oscar, but you were very unlucky in life.
Yeah, I have bad luck. I'm not a lucky person, yes. It's true. It's true. I mean, I've accepted that. Yeah, I am.
Then, and do you shout at whoever is listening there, that's not fair?
Well, my friend
Why
Liz.
Me?
What? My friend Liz.
Who walks
my door.
Yeah.
If I say, go down to the shops, they're down now, you're bad luck, you're knocked down by a car. It's true. If I walk from here to there, something's going to happen. But I've accepted it.
Yeah.
And then if something nice happens, it's an extra bonus, you know.
Mm.
How do you know I'm unlucky?
Well,
who's been giving you your notes?
No, I haven't. Do you want to look at this? No, I've just. I told you I have your file, Miss Fricker.
I didn't realise it was that detailed.
like broken neck, TB, meningitis.
Oh, that's just health wise.
Yeah, no, but that's there. And then you know,
bad genes,
the physical abuse, all that, all
bad
of that.
Bad genes.
But you've been unlucky in every way, which way?
Yeah, sickness has been right from
chased you around the place.
7 years in hospital.
Yeah,
a doctor worked it out recently. Out of my 75 years, it's a long time.
Yeah, that's
a long time. And some of that as a child, when there were no children's wards and that, and you were thrown in when the old ones was coughing and spitting and dying beside you, which was unpleasant. But some of the nurses, you were saying the same thing. Dirt doctors and nurses were lovely, you know. You wanted to be a nurse when you grew up.
No, a doctor. But
I wanted to be a
nurse. You wanted to be a nurse, But you acted a couple of nurses, didn't you?
I did, I casually did.
Because you know quizzes are hugely popular at the moment.
Absolutely.
Yes,
and Alan Carr is bringing all the ones back.
Oh, is he? All the
player cards,
the Bruce Forsyth ones. There's an insatiable appetite for nostalgia. But I've come up with this brilliant quiz question, and it involves you.
Oh, God.
Which two Coronation Street actors went on to win Oscars?
Me?
Yeah. I need an answer, please, Miss Fricker.
Oh, I know. I do know. He did Richard III. He's, I can't remember his name.
I'll give you a clue.
Give me a clue.
Gandhi.
Kingsley.
Ben Kingsley.
Ben Kingsley.
It was a long time coming, but you got it, yeah.
So, old age, you can't
No, but that's how would you know that?
If I'm halfway through my sentence and I stop, don't get a surprise.
So you were a nurse in Coronation Street, and then, of course,
I was.
A nurse in
I delivered Deirdre. That's how old...
Oh, did you?
That's how long ago that is.
That's brilliant.
And you know who was still in it when you're too young to remember this? Ina Sharples, who was a wonderful character with a hairnet on her.
I've seen pictures of her, yes.
And Pat Phoenix, who was like an
And was your man in it? What's his name?
Woman.
Ken Barlow, was he? Was
he
it?
Was in it.
Yeah.
He was in
Not
it.
Mad.
I don't know how he's still going. I think they just turned a key and rocks, you know. But it was wonderful then. It was an exciting thing to be in. I think it was still in black and white when I was there.
And do you look at somebody like him?
The thing now, but sorry to interrupt you.
No, you won't.
Ina Sharples, who was a fantastic actress, and people were kind of nervous at her on the set because she was quite ferocious in the show. I don't think she was a method actor, but she was also quite ferocious to be around. And I was hanging around the set at lunchtime because I didn't
Here's
know
Aidan
where
back,
the canteen
sorry,
was. How are you, Ian?
Still here, Aidan. Still working.
Oh, yeah, Ian Sharples. I was sitting around the set on lunchtime. I didn't go to the canteen. And I heard this incredible, beautiful piano classical thing playing. I thought somebody put the music on. And I was too close. And I went round. And there she was, sitting on her own, getting her little private whatever you do from playing piece from playing the piano. She's an amazing woman.
Because people sometimes look down their noses at people who act in soaps, do they?
They do. And there's so many now.
Yeah.
And they do them in such little time. If you're a good actor, you wouldn't get much chance to show it. You know, they're like that. You know, Casualty wasn't too bad. And I learned so much on Casualty because it was shot with on camera. So it was like doing a film every episode. And I really did learn more about film from that.
Mm.
But now they're doing it, I wouldn't be able to do one now.
Because
I wouldn't be able to.
Soaps are done on multi-cameras.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's too many scenes and there's too many storylines.
So if you're... What they want you to do really is do a scene in one take and move
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't have... I mean, how they learn their lines from day to day. They're great. They're great the way they do it.
So, just Ken Barlow, when you look at somebody like him, he's still working. Do you envy him? Would you like to be still working?
I can't remember what age. He'd be older than me.
Yeah, he's we interviewed him recently. He's over 80. Yeah, he's over 80.
Yeah, he would be,
Yeah.
Well, this kind of rumour went out that I had retired, and I don't think actors ever retired. I think I've sort of semi-retired. I think I just got grumpy with somebody and said I've retired, you know. What was the question? See, now that's old age.
No, it's not. It's not. That happens to me all the time as well. Yeah,
that's old age, right?
Touché. No, the question was do you miss the acting? I suppose that's a roundabout way of asking, do you miss acting?
No, that wouldn't be the description of it. I miss the company of being part of the machine that is, in the end, an artistic production. I miss that. Mm. Don't miss the actual acting itself. Like, it's very, like on this lockdown, God protect me from people who are going around saying, this is the best lockdown I've ever had. I've just built a swimming pool in my back garden and I've just bought, you know, I mean, they're really annoying. Why don't they talk to the people who are desperate? Mm. But they haven't done that. But during this lockdown, I was thinking, somebody was saying, and they were playing the piano, I thought, well, I can't act. You know, if you're a singer, you can practice your singing. So I thought, I'll try. So I got out the Shakespeare book and I started saying a few monologues around the house and saying a few poems, and I felt such a bloody idiot that I just stopped, turned the radio on.
So, because that was a question, an odd question I had to ask you, because I was watching one of your interviews and you said you meditated, and your way of meditating was to speak to the loved ones you've lost.
Yes, through poetry.
Yeah, yeah.
I do that.
Yeah, and do you read them out loud to yourself?
Not really, to myself. That's the thing. Like, that kitchen has terrific acoustics in there. And if I'm an owl, I'm not a lark, so I wouldn't be going to turning the light out until about 3 or 4 in the morning. So if somebody's dead, which happened the other day, I'll go in there and pick a poem, and I'll say it as if somebody else is saying it, in a quiet way, and hear the little echo of it. And it is a form of ritual more than meditation. Mm. The way lighting a candle is ritual, even though you have to do it with the Holy Mary looking down at you up at the grotto, which I have nothing to do with her. But the ritual of lighting a fire to go to the gods, mm, to help you.
So that's your little ritual.
I love lighting fire. To light the fire and I guess send it over to you to help you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
do you understand
yes,
that?
Yes, I do, I do. All yes, right. Yeah, yeah.
That's my sort of thing.
And it was Sean who died. He was a good friend of yours.
Sean O'Toole.
Yeah.
From Cleggan. Ah, a mighty, mighty man. And it's an absolute shame that he couldn't have a funeral, mm, because it would have been one hell of a funeral, I'd say. And I miss him. He's the kind of person that I'm not going to cry about him, but he's a presence. He was a presence in life. And he's gone.
And he's a good friend of yours.
He was, for 40 years, he's been a friend of mine, yeah. Wonderful friend. Mm. Wonderful friend.
It's hard to imagine what it's like for families who are losing people now.
It's awful. And my nephew, Chimo, who knew him from a very, very young age, became like a second father to him and taught him all that freedom down in Kerry, you know, running on the beach, teaching him to ride horses, teaching him how to sail a boat, teaching him how to swim in deep water, teaching him all that freedom. So he's very upset now that he's died. So, mm. And I miss all that in John as well. So, yes, it is terrible for the family.
Who looks out for you? No. I thought that was a serious question. She laughs uproariously at me.
Oh, God almighty, who looks out for me? Nobody. Liz looks after me a little bit. Yeah. And Chimo, my nephew, whom I hadn't been talking to for a while, a lovely lad, it turns out. And who else?
Turns out she's a lovely lad. He'll probably hear this, you know.
No, he's at work, he won't hear. I don't know really, because I've no other family, you know. Mm. Good friends, I suppose. My old friends are all in New York and London. They would look out for me, I suppose, if they can travel, if I die tomorrow. I hope I die tomorrow.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Ah, oh, Brenda, yes. You don't, do you?
People are terrified of talking about death in this country.
No, I'm not. If I say I'd like
to die tomorrow, there's nothing macabre in that at all, you know. 70 years, as Shakespeare said. It's the right time to die. Your body doesn't want to live to be 123. I think that out of the tablets I'm taking, there's one in there to experiment to see if they'd make me live longer, you know. But I can't find out which one it is. Sure.
You drop one out every day to see.
To see what the reaction would be. Yeah.
Sort of perverse.
Suddenly
Russian
my skin
roulette.
Will all become wrinkled. Yeah.
Yeah. We had an American medic on a couple of years ago, and she had written a book of exactly what you said there. You know, she was in her 70s. I've come here. I don't mind if I go tomorrow because I've lived my life. And
exactly. That, yeah.
And do you think that there's a lot of talk about the fact that medicine can keep us alive now, nearly unnaturally?
I think it's unnatural. Very. And I think that it's very difficult to talk about it, Ray, because try and start a conversation with somebody in this country, even about a will. Mm. If you say to somebody, have you made your will? I don't want to be like that. So if you can say, I want to die, well, Mother of Jesus, don't be able to. So yeah, I don't talk about it anymore.
Here's a question for you then. Is there anything for you, Brenda Fricker, to live for?
I could could be sentimental and say, if tomorrow's a sunny day, but it would be as empty as that. Right. You know, it would be as shallow as that. There's nothing deeply important. No, no, there isn't anymore. And I don't mean to be sad or black about that in any way. I just reached that point in my life. You know, I don't want the dog to die before me. I'd like to see her out. I would like the dog to die before me. I wouldn't like to leave her behind.
But you're in good spirits. Is that an act?
In front of you, darling? No, yeah. She was such a charmer. By the way, he's sitting over there in a director's chair with my name written on the back of it, and it's gone to his head.
That's it. So this is what it's like.
In the sunshine.
As action! If
yes, exactly. I think you were in Hollywood.
You said that the time between action and cut were your favourite times.
Absolutely.
And then that's when you were...
Because you're free.
Totally free, yeah.
You're totally free, yeah. And it's a great feeling.
That you were truly somebody else, was it?
No, not necessarily, no. But nobody's going to shout at you, nobody's going to stop you, so all the homework you've done, you can put it into... You can say it, and when you say the words... I don't become the person, I'm not that... You know, I don't believe you can become the person, for God's sake. You are yourself. But when you're saying that and you know the story and you're putting in your contribution to the story and it's like putting the knitting into that particular part of the jumper, you've done it right, that's wonderful. That's what you do it for.
Yeah. And not very comfortable with the red carpets and the...
Oh, God, no.
...production line interviews. No.
I mean, the night of the Oscars, I don't think I even knew there was going to be a red carpet. And I was thrown into this limousine. I had nothing to wear. At about 12 o'clock in the day, and you go at 4:30, Joan Burr, hysteria, Noel Pearson all running around in shops trying to get something for me, and they found this dreadful bloody thing I had to wear, and then I had no shoes. So that's my preparation for the carpet, which is now a fashion parade, of course.
Mm.
And I was standing there, and there were people shouting your name, and everything was awful. And Angelica Houston, I'll never forget it, what a lady. And she was so graceful.
She was nominated as well.
She was nominated.
Same category, yeah.
And she came up and she said, just link my arm. And she said, I'll guide you. And she did.
Isn't that lovely?
She was wonderful. And she kept saying, your name is in the envelope. I said, no, your name is in the envelope. No, your name is in the envelope.
Can you remember who held the envelope?
I can, Kevin Kline.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, your name is in the envelope. But the great crack is representing the next year. Because you've no nerves, and you're going around, and when you get the envelope, about 6 huge, dark, navy blue guards come, and they won't let you move.
Right.
They follow you into the toilet even, you know. And I remember the Dorothy Chandler building is a roundy one. No, it's like spiral one. And the ladies' toilet was right on the bottom. And I was in there, and I can't remember who was nominated now. Al Pacino, Joe Pesci, good actors. And Al Pacino, I knew he'd nominated like 11 times, and I was hoping he'd win. And anyway, came out with the envelope, and they all jumped around me. And we were going back up the stairs, and there was this elderly man who was having trouble going up. He was kind of, you know. So I said, are you all right? And it was Al Pacino.
Right.
And he looked up, and I said, you're going to win. I said, no, master, it's in the, look, there's the envelope. Your name is in the envelope. And he was quite desperate to win, you know. I said, listen, there's no problem. I said, look, where are you sitting? And he said, in the second row. And I went up, and there went out. Oh, Joe Pesci.
Oh, no.
And I must have said it like that, you know.
Oh, you were, yes, yeah, yeah. Disappointed.
And I could see Mr. Pacino out of the corner of my eye, and his head just going down like that.
Oh, no.
But he won the next year.
Your acceptance speech was lovely, because it was matter of fact. It was warm. There were no histrionics.
But nobody believed I didn't write it.
Because it was so pitch perfect.
I hadn't a clue. I mean, I wasn't even looking on the programme as to when Best Supporting Actress came up, because it was nearly the second or third one up. Because Denzel Washington won Best Supporting Actor. It was his first film. And his family were so joyous and happy from that. I was glued to looking at them when I got a nudge from Jim to go back around the back. And he said, they said, no, stay there. And then they said the name. And I thought, oh, yeah. And Jim said to me, and the truth is, God, I mean, may I be struck down dead? No, well, I may be struck down dead anyway. But, I mean, as the phrase goes. And the words that came out were Des and Byrne and Ina Burke. And Ina Burke was an elocution teacher I went to when I was a kid.
Huh.
who taught me a love of English, and that name just
came out of your head. Yes, yeah.
And whatever else I said just was imitating everybody else.
And you said you were bringing it back to Ireland. And
that's when I nearly cried. Did you hear the tears in the voice? Yeah. Everybody, when they go back. I mean, Joe Pesci, when he went back, he bawled crying. I had to hold him because Kevin Klein, when I got it, when you go in off the side back, he pulled a big black drape around me and he said, take this moment, Brenda, because you will never, ever have a private moment again. You have just won an Oscar. Yeah. Take the moment in. And I was going, oh, yes, yes. So I did the same thing for Joe Pesci. And boy, did he need it. He was bawling. And for the rest of the night then, I was going round. And of course, Bob De Niro is the head of all that sort of mafia acting group. And young Italian men dressed in black suits kept following me around at the party saying, Bob would like to come to his table. Right. I said, I'll see him later. And I never went to the table and he got very annoyed with me.
Look at you.
But maybe he wanted
Kevin Klein was right that you never get a moment, because here we are 30 years later sitting outside your front door 2 metres apart.
Talking about it on a lovely day, yes.
I really enjoyed that. That was a lovely chat.
Lovely. Yeah.
Thanks so much for having us.
Not at all.
And enjoy the spotted dog.
He bought me, he baked it.
I baked it.
A spotted dog, which I'm going to go in and glutton myself on.
Now, you have to, a good bit of butter on that.
With butter.
And Liz, you can have some as well. There's
butter.
For two.
He brought me a spotted dog that he made himself.
It's so well, made with currants and raisins. And
it's like, I'll show you.
I like currants.
Yeah, it's nice.
And we have butter, don't we?
Yes.
This is Liz, my friend behind me.
Hi, Liz.
How are you?
Lovely to meet you.
You too.
Brenda said lovely things about you in the interview. So just in case we cut them out in the edit.
No, you better not.
I won't.
They're all lies.
We'll go down to our team bathroom.
We'll go down and batter them. Exactly.
Brenda, thanks. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Niall.
Thank you.
Sitting there.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.